The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Now, the European Commission has called on the pharmaceutical group AstraZeneca to provide satisfactory answers as to why it will not meet its vaccine delivery schedule. Ireland was expected to receive 3.3 million doses of the vaccine. However, on Friday, the company told the EU it would now only be able to deliver about 60% of its initial promised delivery. Europe correspondent with Euronews, Shona Murray, is on the line. Shona, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, we heard Ursula von der Leyen at the beginning of our programme. She did not sound too pleased with the company AstraZeneca, but what can she do about it?
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly what they're considering now. But I think the priority really is that AstraZeneca get the vaccine supplies to the EU as per their contract. That's really the priority. But of course, there's the legal route. And then there's some commentary that the EU has said it would block the exportation of vaccines produced in the EU to third countries. But really, that's not exactly what they've said. What they've said is from now on, any vaccines produced in the EU, they'll have to give the Commission early notification as to where those vaccines are going, to what country. I mean, theoretically, you could say that they may be able to prevent those vaccines being exported, but that's not really the route they want to go down. For now, they've said to AstraZeneca that they want full detail about the production that's gone on over the past few months and where exactly those vaccines have gone to. They said yesterday that those discussions that took place with Stella Kyriakides, who's the EU's Commissioner for Health, and Ursula von der Leyen, that they were insufficient. A lot of conversations went on yesterday. And there really is clear suspicion that AstraZeneca has shipped the vaccines elsewhere to possibly a higher bidder. We don't know that yet because the situation is so incomplete, but that's certainly the suspicion.
The suspicion might be, of course, the UK jumped the gun, gave approval for AstraZeneca / Oxford before anybody else. And I'm sure AstraZeneca were happy to start shipping supplies, get them out of the warehouse, make room for more, all that kind of thing. And then they have a situation where so many people have been vaccinated in the UK who need the second shot. So from a therapeutic point of view, they may be saying, look, you know, we need to send more to the UK so that the vaccine becomes totally effective. And they could point to the EU and their tardiness at approving AstraZeneca as to the reason this delay arose. In other words, blame the EU.
Well, I think that the EMA would say something completely different. Obviously, they wouldn't say that their authorization was tardiness because, you know, we've heard from Eimear Curry before, you know, the reason why they've been slow to authorize, particularly Pfizer vaccine and so on, is because they had, questions around the impact of the vaccine, adverse effects and so on. And they say that they weren't slow, but they were getting it right. And, you know, AstraZeneca is supposed to be authorized on Friday. But nonetheless, you know, the contract was with the EU, 300 million euro, and they are contractually bound to deliver those doses, regardless of whether the UK, you know, has more people vaccinated in the first shot or not. I mean, it doesn't really matter. The point is that the EU has facilitated the production by giving the money early on for 300 million doses, 300 million euro, and that they should they are definitely obliged to fill that contract. That's the bottom line.
Was there any detail of the explanation that AstraZeneca had given, which was they had a disappointing yield from some of their facilities in Europe? Because when we spoke to Professor Luke O'Neill yesterday, he suggested that, you know, they may have supply chain difficulties in sourcing the ingredients that go into the making of the vaccine.
Yeah, so that's the issue, is that there is no, or at least what we know from the conversation that happened yesterday with the commissioner and Ursula von der Leyen, that the responses from AstraZeneca were wholly insufficient. So that there wasn't a logical explanation in relation to ingredients and so on. That and that has why this suspicion remains in place, that there, you know, that the AstraZeneca has literally shipped the vaccine to possibly Israel, because we know Israel paid. This is what's, you know, being said here in Brussels. There's no concrete evidence to any of this, but that there's a concern that they shipped it off to the highest bidder. If they were given an explanation around practicalities and that's why they haven't been efficient, then they could at least say that, and they could, you know, say, well, look, you can improve over the coming weeks. But there is no explanation. And that was after two meetings yesterday with the commissioner and a phone call with Ursula von der Leyen. And last night, the commissioner tweeting late last night that, again, they're extremely disappointed and they're demanding explanations, better explanations from AstraZeneca. So that doesn't seem to be the case. Tomorrow is the next meeting with them between the commission. And again, the commission coming out very strongly saying that they really need to know exactly when the vaccines will be given to Europe. And in before that, anything that is exported, because remember, AstraZeneca, part of it is produced in Belgium, same with Pfizer. Anything that leaves the EU to a third country will need to give the commission prior notice as to where they're going.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a long game, and to thumb your nose at the EU is, for any pharma company, it's not a wise thing to do in, you know, the biggest developed market in the world.
Yeah, well, obviously that, and from a moral perspective, obviously, because everybody had hoped that this was going to be, this given a global challenge, that there would be a global cooperation. And you're right, the money that the EU had paid is quite significant, given that it was servicing, you know, 400 million people and had pre-financed the production of the vaccine well in advance. So it actually helped the vaccine developers. So that's why it's become such a shock that, you know, the vaccine manufacturer could possibly do something like that. And again, like you said, the most, you know, the largest single market in the world, getting money from the commission doesn't make any sense. But we wait to see what happens. We'll hear from Ursula von der Leyen actually today. She's speaking at Davos. Not sure if she's going to bring it up, but we'll also get another briefing in about 40 or 50 minutes from spokespersons. But I did speak to some EU sources this morning. They're remaining incredibly tight-lipped because actually they don't really know what has happened.
Now, there was a report in two German daily papers, Handelsblatt and Bild, and they said in separate reports on Monday that the AstraZeneca vaccine had an efficacy of only 8%, less than 10% anyway, said the other paper, in terms of the over 65s. Now, the company has come out and denied that totally. Where did that come from?
Yeah, this is really fascinating. In Handelsblatt, as you said, it was a political report. I think that's important to state because the article itself didn't have any named sources, but the sources were political sources as opposed to medical sources or scientists. And they said that the AstraZeneca only has 8% efficacy in the over 65s, which is not what we need right now. But just today, the German health ministry has also denied that, saying that there was real confusion, that in actual fact, the 8% refers to the number of people in the study between 56 and 69. So that in the study itself, only 8% of those tested were between 56 and 69, which isn't probably a great sample. But the efficacy issue, that was incorrect. And the thing is, we know that AstraZeneca will be authorized on Friday. So that's when we'll know exactly the truth of this, because it's been ongoing for some days now with the company denying it. But the journalist that wrote it sticking by the story, and now just the health ministry in Germany only in the last hour or so coming out and saying that there was confusion. I suppose that question still remains. Why was there only 8% of people in the test between 56 and 69?
Yeah, because that would be a 14-year cohort. And you would expect that they would be slightly larger in terms of, if you take the cohort that would be vaccinated from the age, round figures, 20 to 90, that's 70 years. So you'd expect it to be around 20% of the cohort, not less than 10%. That's just a top of the head calculation. All right, Seana, so are we going to see any more developments, you think, on this story? AstraZeneca, as I say, thumbing its nose at City Hall in Brussels, not a wise thing to do.
Well, so the next thing that has to happen is AstraZeneca has to supply the commission with details of its production. You mentioned there Luke O'Neill saying that there could be a problem with production in terms of ingredients and so on. The commission doesn't see this as a reasonable excuse because it doesn't see evidence of it. So what they've demanded is details from AstraZeneca about the production and where all of its vaccines have gone to. And that is obviously key as to why there is no vaccine. I mean, it's a 60% drop. That's a huge amount for AstraZeneca being, of course, a vaccine that the EU had been pinning its hopes on, given that it doesn't have to be stored in such low temperature. So it was almost as close as you can get to a silver bullet for January anyway. And it's a cut of 60%, so it's huge. So that's really the next step. If they give, and, you know, people are, like I said, really suspicious that they haven't been able to give this detail so far, or at least in any convincing way.
And they made the point that they could have given the money to another company because there are so many vaccine candidates being developed and some of them are slower than others because of a lack of resources. They could have pumped the money elsewhere, but they didn't. And so they feel rightly aggrieved. Shona, thank you very much for joining us. Shona Murray, who is Europe correspondent with Euronews. Now, in other news, as you heard before, 10 o'clock, level 5 restrictions are set to be extended until at least the 5th of March by the Cabinet. Also, a series of new travel restrictions introduced, including mandatory quarantine for incoming travellers who do not have a negative test. To give us more detail, political editor with the Irish Examiner, Danny McConnell, is on the line. Danny, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, much of this appeared to be leaked by Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, last night. I'm sure the Taoiseach is not well pleased.
Well, I'm sure he probably isn't, but I do think, Pat, we had a lot of detail from Eamon Ryan yesterday morning. He was both on the airwaves, I think, on News Talk and elsewhere. And then he also spoke quite generously on his way into the Cabinet Subcommittee yesterday. So there clearly is a deliberate strategy from some parts of government anyway, at least, to try and soften the ground and kind of get the information out there. I do think, you know, we've had a slow drip of information out since the parliamentary party meetings of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael last week, where sort of the sort of direction of travel was sort of spelled out. But what is very, very clear is that the public have dragged the government and the cabinet to the position where mandatory quarantining is going to be brought in for a certain number of passengers. The government has set its face against this. I mean, NPHET have been asking for this since last May. If you go back on the letters that they've issued and sent to government, you know, they have sought these sort of measures for very obvious reasons, because obviously air travel is very, you know, it just transmits this virus at an alarming rate. And clearly what we saw over Christmas was a large number of people coming back into the country to see their family and loved ones over Christmas. A large number of people came in from the southeast of England in particular. They were carrying this new UK variant strain. And, you know, ipso facto, as people like to say, the numbers here have gone, you know, have gone up through the roof in combination with, I suppose, the opening up of hospitality, at a very early stage in December by the government. So it really has become a perfect storm of poor decision making. And now we are looking into a very dark and gloomy period, because while they're saying March 5th, I think there's little or no chance that restrictions will be lifted in any sort of meaningful sense at that point. We're looking a long road ahead without question.
They are not going to make a decision on the leaving cert, and they are talking about a serial resumption of school activities with those who need special attention, special needs and so on, being perhaps first, but leaving certs perhaps being the second cohort, perhaps not every day of the week, perhaps 2-3, 3-2, that kind of way, for a 5-day week, part of the class coming in for part of the week. It's not understood what way that would work, but these are the kind of noises being made.
Absolutely. So getting the children with special needs is definitely the top priority, because they realise that having those children with all their additional requirements, having them at home all the time is not good for them. It's not good for their families. And, you know, there are reports, be they anecdotal or whether or not there's actual evidence of this being submitted to government. But all the people I spoke to last night, Pat, were making it clear that, you know, that there's a clear sense that people are regressing very quickly. And it is in a sort of an urgent situation that needs to be addressed very quickly. So I think we're likely to see some movement in relation to children with special needs in the short run. That'll be first. I was interested to hear last night several mentions of primary school. Now, I hadn't expected that. You know, I had expected the leaving cert to kind of come second, but there was a real drive on to get primary school kids back in before the end of February as well. Now, that would be, I think, a huge achievement given where we are and given the sort of the failure of Norma Foley on two occasions to get schools back up and running again, even in a limited basis. If they were to get primary school kids back up and back in before February, that would be seen as a significant achievement in addition to the leaving cert as well. But like, the unions and their members have made it very clear, you know, they still have real concerns, I suppose, where the numbers are, the transmissibility of the new variant strain. And, you know, despite a kind of an unprecedented level of support and kind of assurances being put in place by the government, we still haven't reached agreement. And there are an awful lot of people within government who've expressed, I think, an annoyance and a frustration that the government hasn't taken a harder line approach against the teacher unions. You know, saying, you know, ultimately that we're still hearing the language of education partners. We need to do this with cooperation and agreement. You know, there is a school of thought, and there is a school within government, and I think within the general populace as well, who would like to see a tougher line being taken.
David in Westmeath, one of our News Talk texters, has been on. With Level 5 being extended, there needs to be a serious conversation about the schools staying open into the summer when they eventually open. Work is being done from home, but it's not nearly enough. Now, you can predict what the teachers' unions would say to any such suggestion that they forego the three good reasons for being a teacher, which is June, July and August.
Absolutely. Now, I've heard there have been political suggestions about either moving forward the midterm break to offset that those sort of difficulties or extending the school year. I know likes of Malcolm Byrne, who's an education specialist himself, the senator, has made those calls repeatedly in the last week to 10 days or so. And there, to my mind, there seems to be an element of logic. There has to be some give and there has to be some take in relation to all of this. Now, I think the government has, as I said, they've sort of opened the checkbook to an unprecedented level, both in terms of, you know, from last year where we saw 400 million being made available for minor works and trying to kind of adapt school and classrooms to make them safe. But, you know, when you're getting into space, as the government was doing, of offering teachers sort of subsidised childcare, that's a very significant step forward in terms of what, because there are many other workers on the front line. Like, I don't see nurses getting offered a subsidised childcare either. Like, so, I mean, that was a very generous sort of step forward from the government, and still it met with opposition from the teachers. So I think there has to be a bit of give and take if this issue is to be resolved, because look at the cohort of who are looking to sit their Leaving Cert this year. They missed a huge chunk of last year. They're now missing at least a month, if not two, maybe possibly 3 months of this year, and they're expected to sit their Leaving Cert. You know, I mean, something has to give. And ultimately, I think, you know, while there's a deep resistance to sort of going down the calculated grade or, you know, predicted grade system for a Leaving Cert, you know, we are running out of time. And I think there is a recognition within government that they can't do the slow no that they did last year.
Yeah. Danny, I noted that the head of the HSE, Paul Reid, yesterday admitted or said that they had ordered huge quantities of antigen tests, which they're going to deploy in obviously healthcare situations. You know, we've been arguing in this program for months and months and months that antigen testing can be used to figure out who's infectious. That could be a nurse, a school teacher, someone working in a nursing home. It could be any cohort of workers who are deemed essentials. You test people every day. It costs a fiver a pop, much cheaper than the COVID weekly payment and all of that. As you mentioned earlier, the government has had to be dragged in the right direction by the population. There are other ways of coping with all of this. Do you think we're going to hear anything about that today?
Well, we're definitely going to see an advance in terms of antigen testing, because, and that's largely to do primarily with hauliers going to France, because obviously there's been a requirement put in place by France for that sort of testing. So there will be movement there. Whether or not there's a kind of a desire to move antigen testing for the entire populace or even certain cohorts of the populace, I don't think so, Pat. I think they've kind of wedded themselves to the, you know, the rollout of the vaccine and the sort of the PCR test. Now, again,
which is now going to be slower. That's the problem, that, you know, absolutely, where they were thinking by the end of March, we'll have all the over 65s vaccinated, by the end of April, another cohort, by the end of May. That's not going to happen, it looks like. So they'll have to think again.
They certainly will. And I think as well, you know, we've on several occasions sought to throw all our eggs into one basket or one or two baskets. And again, we're paying the price for it. We hitched our tent essentially to the grand European project. And obviously there have been huge delays, as you were speaking with Shona Murray there before, and around the rollout of AstraZeneca. And in terms of the Pfizer vaccine, you know, deadlines and kind of production lines have not been met. So that's causing a difficulty. However, there's also been criticisms here about our readiness to distribute that vaccine once it arrived here. But I think ultimately, you know, the silver bullet had been, you know, the vaccine had been portrayed and sort of sold as the silver bullet as our way out of this, because we couldn't exactly go to a full zero COVID strategy because of the North and our close proximity to the UK. So getting the vaccine was seen as the way out of this. Now we're hearing a much more nuanced argument. Now we're seeing it might not be fully effective. It must be slower. And that's deeply frustrating for a public that have really kind of, you know, their patience is wearing thin. And it's clear when you see, you know, the number of fines that have now been issued for people kind of venturing beyond their 5K, public compliance with regulations is breaking down. And that's a real concern for government, because they've only managed to get this far largely because of the goodwill and the support of the public. Yeah. And if that sort of confidence in the system, the vaccines and the competency of the rollout, if that comes in under question, then I think, you know, the government could really lose control of the situation, because you know ultimately at the bottom line is, you know, the desire and the willingness of businesses and the community to jump in and out of these sort of rolling knockdowns is, I think, all but expired and exasperated. I think the feeling from the business community and the people I've been speaking to is, if we're in a lockdown, let's make it count and let's get it over with, so we can actually start and open and do it on a sustainable basis. And I do think that message has begun to sink in with some members of government, maybe not all of them.
All right, Danny, we'll get details of what the Cabinet finally agrees later on in the day. Danny McConnell, political editor with the Irish Examiner, thank you very much.